Well, hello, Queens. Welcome to another episode. How are you doing today? Today's episode, I'm sure you already know the title, Eating Disorders and OCD. This was inspired by a question from the lovely Gail. And I'm going to read her question. However, I remember there being a second part to the question. And when I copied and pasted it for this episode a while back, I don't know what I've done with it and I can't find the question again, but I do remember she asked something about step-by-step process. So I'm just going to add that bit to the end. Okay, so Gail says, "Hi Victoria, you are such a blessing to me in my recovery." I'm so glad, Gail. "I heard you on a much earlier video say you loved suggestions. I'm making such amazing revelations lately and I think you may have said at some point that an eating disorder is a form of OCD." Exactly, OCD around food. "That was so helpful to me. I'm wondering if you can do a full video on it or point me to one you've done in the past. The only way to cure OCD is to face the fear and stop the behaviour. How simple. I am very analytical and it makes so much sense. That treatment with working on body love and acceptance, and then there's a clear view to recovery." And then this is a part that I missed, but I remember her asking something like, "Can you give us a step-by-step on how to overcome OCD ED behaviours?" So let's dive into it. But before we do, I feel like I need to cough and I'm recovering from something. There we go, it's already happened. I'm recovering from something and I have been having these awful coughing episodes where I'm having to mute myself in coaching sessions, which is not ideal. And so if for some reason that happens, then I'm sorry and I will edit it out, but you might notice some kind of weird editing going on. If that happens, let's pray for it not to happen. That's why I sound also a bit different in my voice, but there we go. This is not about my immune system upgrade right now. It's about OCD and eating disorders. So let's dive straight in. And I've only got bullet points today because I didn't feel like writing a whole blog about this. I just felt like writing some bullet points and speaking to them. And so here we go. I just want to share my take on my experience with OCD and eating disorders, and also point out that I didn't have diagnosed OCD before I was diagnosed with the eating disorder, because OCD and eating disorders are two different things and they completely overlap. And there is such a thing as OCD-ED, which is what I'm talking about today. So I'm not talking specifically about OCD that was present in your life before the eating disorder. However, I did have some kind of signs or kind of telltale signs that there was some kind of OCD type behaviours before the eating disorder came along. So I'm going to share my experience with that and then what happened in the eating disorder to see if that can validate your experience. So before the eating disorder, I was generally very clean, very tidy, and this was just learned behavior, I guess, from my mom especially. Everything had to be in order. Everything had to have its place. If you used a cup or a bowl, then you couldn't just leave it on the side. It had to go in the dishwasher or the sink. So I guess that's not really OCD, but those were the signs that I remember not being able to relax if anything at all was out of place. So I couldn't sit down and watch TV, even as like a child, if something wasn't in its place. I had to go and put it in its place and then I could relax and be okay. And then as I got older, I guess this is did interlap with the ED, but this has just came up, so I'm just going to say it. I would panic when one thing went wrong or something big didn't go as planned, it would almost be like my brain was then offering me or reminding me of every single thing in my life that I wasn't happy with, that needed changing, that was on my to-do list. My brain would offer it to me all in one go. And then I had this overwhelming feeling of having to immediately sort those things out straight away. It was like everything was just being catastrophized within my own head and something would go wrong. And then my brain, like I said, would remind me of all the other things that needed my attention right now, even though they were fine to just be left for a couple of weeks, like a moment before something went wrong. it was like everything was like shown to me all at once. I'm trying to describe that and it's hard to describe the experience, but I hope that some of you, well, I don't hope that you understand actually, but I do know that some of you will get that, will relate to that. So one thing goes wrong and all of a sudden everything that is needing to be changed in your life needs to be done yesterday, else you are not okay. It's very kind of all or nothing, of course. These personality traits and characteristics of all or nothing comes up a lot in eating disorders and personalities of those that have eating disorders. So it was almost like something's gone wrong. If I need to fix this thing, I need to fix fucking everything immediately, which is impossible anyway. But my brain thought it would be helpful to offer me that and completely overwhelm me. And so then when the eating disorder happened, oh my gosh, everything got so much worse. Everything had to be in its place, but not just in its place, it had to be facing a certain way, meaning if you put cups away, then the handles had to be to the right-hand side and at a slight angle. So if someone who I was living with at the time or whatever it may be, they had put the cup away, I had to go and check that the cup had been put away in the exact position that I wanted and needed it to be put away at. We're loading the dishwasher. Nobody else could load the dishwasher because it needed to be a certain way and it was not okay if it wasn't a certain way. I would double check everything. I need to cough. Sorry. I needed to double check everything. So let's say the cup analogy. I would check the cup was in its place and then I would like just open the cupboard door just to check again. And it was double checking and it was driving me fucking crazy, but I couldn't stop it. I would have this weird thing, and I think I've shared this before in an episode, maybe a few times before, where I would only allow myself to drink half a cup of water a day in the depth of the anorexia. And I would put this half a cup of water in the top part of the freezer compartment because I liked the water cold for some reason. So I would keep obsessively checking this half a glass of pathetic glass of water, and I would check that it hadn't been moved, no one had moved it, it was just freezing enough, and I'd get it out, then I'd allow myself a sip and I'd let it defrost a bit, then I'd put it back in. Just this weird fucking behavior of the water in the freezer, but I'd have to keep checking it. And then of course, in terms of body checking, exercise, every time I ate anything, I had to lift whatever I was wearing up and check my stomach. Had to check it was still flat, had to check I looked okay, checked I didn't gain 1,000 pounds from the second that I've eaten it and it's gone into my tummy. That was an obsession that I had. I had to check every time when I got dressed, before I went out the house, when I went to the toilet, I had to check my body in the mirror. And then, of course, the OCD eating disorder compulsions around exercise were there as well. I had to do some kind of exercise before a certain time in the morning. I could not start my day, meaning go to work or get on with my day if it was a weekend, without some kind of exercise or body movement, to the point where I was literally fucked afterwards. I couldn't just do, you know, a light cardio or a bit of a body pump. I had to go back to back with classes, overexert myself, and then I would be okay and feel safe enough and okay enough within myself and my body to get on with the day. I'm sure you can relate with some or all of the behaviors, and I want you to know that you're not alone. All of the fucked up crazy things that you're currently doing, I have a lot of clients who have shared that they have to clean the entire kitchen before they eat anything. I've had some clients share that when they sit down to eat on the sofa, they have to sit on something. They can't sit directly on the sofa. They have to have everything exactly the right way, like their food on a tray, their cup of tea there, this being played in the background. They have to have this obsessive, controllable ritual before they can do a certain behavior. And that can stem into, you know, into the real world. Like if you won't sit on a train seat, for example, because of the germs, can massively affect your quality of life. And again, this can stem separately as OCD by itself, but a lot of these behaviors are actually stemming from the eating disorder. But either way, all of these behaviors are completely stemming from fear. It's all from fear. And the control is there. Because when we control or try to control everything, our behaviors, our environment, what we do, when we do it, how often we do it, it forms a sense of security. It gives us a false sense of safety. It brings us comfort because it relieves the anxiety in the moment. And it's also a survival mechanism, because fear is often a false experience appearing real, but fear can sometimes be very real in the fact that, well, it always feels very real, but it can be very real in the fact that if your body, for example, thinks that there is no, your brain and body think there is not enough food in the environment, it has every right to be afraid, because that's a threat to your survival. If you've had a lot of trauma as a child and you were brought up in a violent environment, you have every right and every reason, and it would make sense to think that the environment isn't safe, and what can you do to protect yourself? So of course, all of this stems back to the way you've been brought up. It can also be genetic, it can be passed down genetically. There's all sorts of reasons why this happens. The most important thing to know is that you can heal this, full stop. You absolutely can, and it starts with understanding. We don't have to understand everything, but understanding is really helpful to enable us to move forward. So going back to the false sense of security, the false sense of safety, being a survival mechanism, OCD, in terms of the eating disorder OCD, it's usually a symptom of malnutrition. So if you're not eating enough, your brain has every right to think that the environment that you are currently in is not safe. Because if it were safe, you would just eat enough. There would be enough food. There wouldn't be a shortage, right? It wouldn't be a volatile, is that the right word to use? Unsafe, scarce environment. And so the malnutrition actually, a lot of the time, creates the OCD type thoughts and behaviors. And so it will double down, your brain will drive you to double down on behaviors that you think support your safety and security. There's actually been studies done in rats. I mean, honest to God, they do all studies on rats, don't they? The poor things. There have been studies in rats that show the more fear, let me rephrase that. The more hungry the rats are, so the more starving, the more hungry, the less food that the rats have in their environment, the more fear they are in general, which makes sense. Again, going back to your environment not being safe, your brain thinks your environment is not safe if you're not eating enough food, because otherwise, why would you not eat enough food, right? And there's a great way that Gwyneth Olwyn, who has this book, where is it? I want to share it with you. It's literally next to me, and I don't know where the hell it's gone right now. It's over there and I can't reach it. She has a great book called The Homeodynamic Recovery Method, and she says that an eating disorder is misinterpreting food as a threat. So can you imagine, your environment isn't safe, and then the very thing that you need in order to support your safety, the very thing you need in order to let go of the eating disorder OCD, is the very threat itself. So food shortages, you're not eating for whatever reason, your environment is then deemed as not safe by your brain and body. And then because if you have the genetics for anorexia and the migration response is switched on, then all of a sudden, your brain also sees food as a threat within itself. And so the very thing you need to support yourself to recovery is the very threat itself. And that's why recovering from an eating disorder can be extremely challenging. Of course, not impossible. Of course, doable. And you can fucking do it. You can. But it's the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. I'm not going to lie. Even compared to the abuse that I was in, like physical abuse daily, recovering from the eating disorder was harder than enduring that. And that's my opinion. But I did it. And I'm here. And honestly, there's nothing else that I've experienced in my life as I've built my business and go through life that even touches the fear and the discipline that I had to have to recover from an eating disorder. So when you recover, I haven't lost a parent yet to the spirit world, so I don't know how that feels. But from my experience so far in life, when you've recovered from an eating disorder, tell life to bring it the fuck on, because there's nothing that can touch you. Seriously. That's what my experience was and is. So going back to the eating disorder, seeing food as a threat, and then in general, your environment's a threat. So you've got all sorts of thought processes going on, and you're just living from like a fear bomb. The migration response is your brain changing, and it's not getting any reward from food whatsoever. That's another episode altogether. Let me know. I do link Tabitha Ferrara a lot because she talks about this in great detail. But let me know if you do want me to do an episode specifically about the migration response in my own words. And of course I will. And then if you think of OCD, ED behaviours, they don't have to be actual physical behaviours such as body checking, the exercise compulsion and addictions, having to eat food at a certain time. If someone makes you 5 minutes late from eating your time of lunch, then you'd actually want to murder the person. All these rules and rituals and obsessions around food, your body, your environment, they are very physical. But I know all too well that these rituals, this form of OCD, can be very much mental. So meaning I would lie in bed at night and do a post-mortem of what I'd eaten that day as I was in bed. So I would go back over my day and almost like I would literally watch myself eat what I had eaten. And I would do this throughout the day as well. So, excuse me, sorry. I would do this throughout the day as well. So when I'd eaten lunch, I would like make sure like an hour later I would sit there. And I would go back and see myself get my cup of tea, get whatever lunch it was I had, and watch myself eat it and just like replay that moment over and over again to make sure that it was okay, to make sure that I didn't overeat or whatever it was that I was afraid of in that moment. So maybe you can relate to that. It takes up so much brain space. And in these mental rituals and like post-morteming your food, these thoughts just spiral out of control if you don't do the behavior. So let's say that I was in bed and I was like, right, I'm not going to do this behavior anymore because it's not serving me. Then I'll be like, oh my God, but what if this? If I don't do the behavior, then what if I gain a ton of weight? And what if, what if, what if, what if? All again, born from fear, all anxiety provoking. For example, if I had, which I did have my entire life until I really, truly recovered, a fear of weight gain. So the fear of fatness, if I thought I'd eaten too much, it would literally feel like my skin was crawling and I would do anything to make that feeling go away. So the anxiety and the overwhelm of gaining weight was so big and so petrifying, I would literally want to crawl out of my own skin and I would do anything in my power to make that feeling go away. And that would be a behavior such as purging to relieve some of the anxiety, planning even more heavier restriction, doing something to try and get rid of that feeling that was stemming from that innate fear of weight gain. But here's the thing about continuing to relieve the anxiety in the moment. Every time we escape situations that make us anxious, the cost of that short-term comfort is long-term anxiety. So really think about that. Yes, in the moment when you're feeling like overwhelmed with anxiety and your skin is crawling and you want to do the behavior to make yourself feel better, all you're doing is perpetuating and feeding the OCD eating disorder behavior. You're perpetuating and feeding the anxiety. And so there needs to come a point where something has to change, because if nothing changes, you'll keep doing the same thing over and over again, and then you'll get the same results over and over again. Even if you want differently, something needs to change. And this is a quote that my lovely friend Julia, who I'm sure most of you will know by now, she said this to me during one of our coaching calls one time, and this resonated so much, so I'm going to share it with you again today. What I thought I was in control of was actually controlling me. And when I really grasped that, so I grasped this long before I met Julia, but I didn't actually get it. The way she articulated that was so beautifully put. But when I realized that I wanted to stop the eating disorder. I wanted to stop the eating disorder OCD bullshit that was completely taking over my entire life, taking up all of my headspace. I wanted to stop it so badly, I would be so fucking annoyed that my brain was in control of me, or these behaviors were in control of me instead of the other way around. That's when things started to shift for me. So I'm going to go into like a step-by-step process for you, Gail, and all the listeners. It is Gail, right? I've not just completely made your name up. Yeah, it's Gail. And I'm going to speak more in depth for each one in underneath my little steps. But step one to get rid of all of this, right, and to heal, is you need to want what is promised on the other side of recovery more than the relief that the OCD ED brings you. So you need to want what I say recovery is, and not just me, all the other people that have recovered, more than the comfort and the safety that your current behaviors bring you now. Of course, you don't know what it feels like to live where I am. And that's why it's helpful to speak to people who have recovered, because you've never met a person who has recovered from an eating disorder, an OCD, that regrets it, right? I'm here saying how fucking incredible it is, and it really truly is, to live in true freedom, to live in body acceptance, body love, self-love. Oh my God, it's indescribable, right? You need to want what I'm describing more than you want to stay where you are. That's always step number one. Number two, and then here comes the action. Be willing to do what's necessary in order to fully recover. And you know what that is? Is to face your fear of weight gain and to feel anxiety. Now, of course, you need support through this. Otherwise, of course, well, why isn't everyone already recovered then if they want it enough and they're willing? You need support through this. Like, it can be so overwhelming to sit in those feelings. And you can distract to support yourself. This is why step-by-step support from a professional is, I want to say, crucial. People do this by themselves. They do recover. Tabitha Farrar recovered by herself. I didn't. And I say it like that because I did receive coach. I've literally been having coaches and still have a coach since I was 30, and now I'm 36. I love coaching, obviously, which is why I'm a coach myself. But I've had coaches that haven't given me everything I've needed, and I've kind of created it myself alongside different types of coaching and learning that I've done. But ultimately, I did not do this alone. I don't think I could. And I didn't. So you don't have to do this alone either. Even if you can't afford coaching, even if like you can't afford group coaching, you're here, you're listening to this, you're watching this, you're working on yourself. You're not alone in this. Okay. So reach out for help in free support group, my free support group, all the things. So in order to feel the anxiety, and I'm going to go into that in a bit more detail in a moment, actually, it's a case of knowing that the worst thing that will ever happen to you is that you will feel a feeling, and you can do it. You can feel the feeling. It's a case of understanding your thought spiral and taking charge of your thoughts and paying attention and putting your attention on thoughts that serve you, that bring as much relaxation as possible, that ground you. Number one is to want what is promised on the other side of recovery more than you want to stay where you are. Number two is be willing to do what's necessary to fully recover. For example, face your fear of weight gain and feel anxiety. Number three is to do the opposite of what the eating disorder OCD is telling you to do and repeat. More about that in a moment, because we need to go more into depth in that. But it's basically, like you said, Gail, quite simply but not easily, doing the opposite of what the eating disorder or the OCD want you to do, and just being consistent with repetition, and then those feelings, those urges will actually go away, because your brain's always watching you. Depending on what you do, your brain will change, right? Because you get to change your brain through neuroplasticity. Your mind and your brain are two different things. The mind is a part of you that is consciousness that gets to choose. The mind isn't the brain. You have a brain. It's different. Okay. Number four, this can be really beneficial, is to take up a hobby to help distract yourself. So something repetitive. So those that have severe OCD, ED behaviours, something repetitive such as knitting, arts and crafts, keeping your hands busy, doing puzzles, crosswords, etc. Something to occupy the brain and the hands, something to focus on as you start recovery can be really beneficial. Let me just take a sip of my drink. Number five, having accountability. This is crucial. Someone who is expecting you, for example, to send them what you say you're going to eat tomorrow, or someone who is expecting you to send them photos or a list of what you've eaten today. So this is where coaching can come into play, obviously, and mentoring or a friend that's willing to support you through recovery. And again, it comes down to you don't have to do this alone. Accountability can be so, so crucial to support you through this. And number six is similar but not the same. It's support. Support from someone you live with, if possible. I've had clients move back in with their parents to prioritize recovery, and that's a very smart thing to do. So support from someone who you live with. Notice the signs before the signs. For example, if this was one for me, and have an SOS plan in place. So when I noticed that I would start to worry about how much butter Wouter, my now husband, was using to cook, and I would start to then want to start taking over the cooking so I could control the amount of butter that I was using to cook things in. I knew that if that continued, then I would start to count. Then I would start to try and do little micro restrictions here and there to try and compensate for the fear of the butter that I had, which ultimately was fear of weight gain. So when I noticed I had a bit of an issue around the butter he was using, my SOS plan was very simple. And that was to just share with him, okay, I'm having the thing come up again where I'm wanting to control how much butter you're using and I'm feeling annoyed at you for using so much butter. So I'm just sharing that with you so you can just talk me down and give me a hug and remind me that I don't worry about that bullshit anymore. And so I've taught him how to support me through that. So he would just hug me and remind me why I don't need to be worrying about any of that shit anymore. And then I could stop that behavior and continue recovery, right? But if I didn't notice the behavior before the behavior, meaning the feeling of unease with the butter amount, which would then go into counting, which would then spiral into other stuff, I would support myself by sharing with him, and I lived with him and still do, and that was supportive of me during recovery. So I'm curious, what can you do to support yourself in your environment and get other people involved to support you in your recovery? And number seven, oh my God, I'm sorry for sniffing and coughing and all these things. Number seven is you will need to use all that discipline of yours that you absolutely have. I know you have it in ample amounts. You will need to use discipline to continue rewiring the behavior. And so of course, when you're out of malnourishment, this gets easier. So for now, you will have to use a fuck ton of discipline to do the opposite of what the eating disorder and the OCD want you to do. Want it enough, be willing to sit with the discomfort of the anxiety and the overwhelm, get support through that, and use that discipline to do the opposite of the behavior. Because listen to this, you train your brain via your behavior. So why not train your brain that it is safe to be in the environment you're in, it's safe for someone else to cook and use a shitload of butter, it's safe for you to eat Nutella out the jar, all the things that the eating disorder OCD doesn't want you to do, show your brain that it is indeed safe to do those things. So a mantra that can be really helpful, and this is helpful for me, is I can tolerate this feeling and I will not act on it. I will breathe through this feeling, I will write about this feeling, I will talk about this feeling, but I will not act on it. And that can be when you're wanting to purge. That can be when you're like, your skin is literally feeling like it's itching and you want to crawl out of yourself because the anxiety is so overwhelming. That can look like taking a breath and being like, right, I can tolerate this feeling and I'm not going to act on it. And then what can I do to support myself through this feeling? And knowing that the OCD ED was created due to seeking safety, hence the constant need to try and control, how can I support myself into feeling as safe as possible in each area of my life? Do you feel safe at home? Do you feel safe at work? And I don't just mean physically safe, I mean mentally and emotionally safe. So really write these things down and really take the time to ask yourself, to support yourself through this, how can I feel safe to be me without using self-harming behaviors such as OCD, eating disorder behaviors? For example, I had the fear of weight gain. It felt innately unsafe for me to gain weight. My partner's going to leave me. I'm not going to be loved. I'm not going to be accepted. I'm not going to be seen as the best. I'm not going to be validated. I had so much fear around that. So how can you support yourself through that fear? So for me, in regards to the fear of weight gain, it was talking to my partner and saying, look, in recovery, I'm gaining weight. It doesn't matter if I'm afraid of weight gain, I'm still gaining weight. My fear is happening and I'm still afraid of it because I'm afraid of more weight gain, right? So I'm also afraid that you won't find me attractive anymore. I'm also afraid that I will lose a body that you so regularly validate all the time. And I have all this fear and I'm just sharing vulnerably about my fears. Share with your partner how you feel. And I was met with love, unconditional love. And I said to him, how do you say that I'm perfect the way I am in this bigger body when you said the same thing to me when you met me and I was in a much smaller body? And he sat there and he was like, that is a great question. And he said, honestly, it's just you. You're perfect as you are, like all of you, your essence, your sexuality, your vibe, your energy, just you. He couldn't really describe it. And that really helped me to see that, oh, wow, I am more than just my body. If I allow myself to fully be seen and to fully be me, there's more to me than just what my body looks like. So I shared with him my insecurities. And I also talked to others. I immersed myself in the recovery world of those that have gained a lot of weight in recovery and who were happy in themselves. And again, nobody regrets recovery. So allow me to inspire you. Allow me to show you that I have gained weight and I'm the happiest I've ever been. Not that I like the way my body looks better than certain points when I was smaller, but it really doesn't matter. Like it, I know I say it's so blasé, but it really does not matter to me anymore. When you do the work, everything changes. Like your perception of yourself and life changes. You separate your worthiness and your happiness from your body size. That's the biggest one, obviously. So support yourself through your biggest fears. Learn from other people. Explore what weight gain means to you. What would happen if you gain weight? Or what do you think would happen if you gain weight? And then what would happen because of that thing happening? And then what? And then what, etc. And get right down to the root cause of your fear. You can learn a lot about yourself, especially if you have a talented coach to support you through asking you these questions. And then also to support you with what comes up in answering those questions. Because when you can trust yourself, when you can feel safe within who you are then safe to be in the world. You then are able to embrace uncertainty. Because here's the thing, the only one certain thing in life is uncertainty. And so when you no longer need to feel the need to control to try and feel safe, when you no longer need to feel the controlling, when you no longer feel the need to control your body size, when you no longer feel the need to control your environment, to control the cleanliness, to control in order to feel okay, when you innately feel okay and safe within who you are, when you trust yourself and you trust your instincts and your intuition, bring it on. The world happens uncertainty happens and you embrace it instead of trying to control it and run away from it at all costs. Because as I said, the only certain thing in life is uncertainty anyway. So you may as well embrace that. And also I wanted to go into more depth on how to do the opposite of the eating disorder OCD behaviors on repeat. And that is to create routine rituals to support recovery. Sorry, excuse me. So for example, if you have to clean the entire kitchen before you prepare food, what other ritual can you start doing instead? I always say swap, don't stop when you're changing harmful behaviors. So ask yourself, well, first of all, you need to get clear on what your ritual, eating disorder, OCD behavior rituals are. Write them down, look at them and be like, right, what can I do instead? So creating a new ritual that's going to support recovery. So what can you do instead of that harmful ritual behavior? And as I was sharing before, I was so mad. I was so angry at the thought that something was controlling me, even my own brain, that I used the anger and then the discipline to literally stop doing the thing. So I didn't create new rituals in place. I just was so fucking pissed off that I was being controlled by this thing that I thought I was in control of, that I did the opposite on purpose. So for example, instead of cleaning the kitchen before I'd eat, I would swear and stomp around and slam things around as I was getting something to eat, almost as a like, fuck you to the OCD eating disorder behavior, and I would get the food anyway. If I'd be buttering my toast and the eating disorder would be like, be careful not to put too much butter on there, I would put extra butter on there on purpose as a fuck you to the behavior. That's what I did. That's how I approached recovery. I went all in with doing the absolute opposite of what any OCD eating disorder behavior was telling me to do. And by the way, when I was doing that, I had no fucking clue who I was. I was in the biggest identity crisis ever because I was going against my entire identity. It felt awful. It felt more than awful. Give me some more feeling words. Oh my God, I'm stuck. It was horrific. I was petrified. It felt lonely. It felt like I was dying. It felt all the things. And at the same time, I had my eyes on the prize of freedom. I didn't know if I could achieve it. I just, you know, knew that I couldn't continue the way I was. So I had my eyes on the prize. I had like a vision of where I wanted to go. Didn't know what it felt like, but I just knew I didn't want to be obsessed with food and my body anymore. I was done with it. So I felt awful doing the opposite. Of course I'm going to feel awful doing the opposite. Of course you are. Because you're doing the opposite of what your whole brain wants you to do. If you're in the migration response, you're doing the opposite of what your biology wants you to do. But you can do it because you have the fucking power. And look at me now. And I do not regret recovery in the slightest. So what I would like to leave you as homework, Gail, and anybody who this is going to resonate with, is is to ask yourself the question, what OCD ED traits can you use for good to support your recovery? So I would like you to brainstorm again, write down all of your OCD ED behaviors, brainstorm how you can use similar, not the same thing, obviously, but how can you use your OCD traits to support recovery? Because everything you are, you can pivot to use to support yourself to recovery. You can. And so you need to get clear on what this looks like for you. It is as simple as doing the opposite of the ED behavior. It's not easy though. So support yourself as much as possible. Of course, it goes without saying, you need to be doing the body image work, the self-love work, inner child stuff, all of that to support yourself through recovery so you have lasting lifetime recovery. And you will get there. Have faith. Faith and fear are both invisible. You may as well choose faith if you're going to choose one or the other, right? Fear is always going to be there. Instead of it being in the driver's seat or the passenger seat, put it in the back seat and then in the boot or in the trunk, whatever you, wherever you're from, you call it something differently. because fear does not have to drive your life any fucking longer. You have got this. And you will start to notice, and I have noticed this within myself as well, as you recover, the OCD behaviors and thoughts and rituals will start to fade away. You have to train yourself with this first. So, for example, if you're a tidy, clean freak, you have to allow things to be dirty, allow things to be out of place, and sit with the anxiety that that brings up. Like one of my clients, Julia, actually, I advised her to put all the pillows and the cushions on the floor from the sofa and not perfectly in alignment every 5 minutes and leave them on the floor all day until the evening and just go and look at the mess of the cushions on the floor and just be okay with whatever anxiety thoughts come up. And then she was able to bring humor into it because she had me as a coach as well. And I always bring humor into healing. So you can do things like that as well. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking now because I can feel my throat definitely needs some lubricant and some rest. What I will share, something very exciting. Oh my God, I'm so excited to share this. I have changed the way my group coaching works. So whereas before, my group coaching was monthly group coaching calls in a highly supportive support group, I have changed my group coaching to weekly group coaching calls. And so check it out. I will link it below directly to my group coaching page so you can read all about it. Highly supportive. Please check it out. If you've wanted to work one-to-one with me and it's not been in alignment with you for the investment, I have created this group coaching with a payment plan option as well to be extremely supportive, as close to one-to-one coaching as possible in a group environment. And I'm so excited to support you and serve you to full recovery. And as always, I appreciate you being here. I thank you in advance for leaving me a 5-star review. Let's see if we can drown out that 1-star that was given to me a while back. And let's see if we can get to 5 stars. I really appreciate your support with this. Share this episode with someone who you might find it beneficial. And I love you and thank you so much for being here. And I will see you next week. Lots of love.